Can they deny kids are being held incommunicado? It is a fact. Can they deny people have died in jail over the past few months because of their religion? It is a fact. I bring facts.
Closing out her term as Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Eritrea, Sheila Keith-Ruth recently brought those facts to the attention of the Human Rights Council in her final report in the job. But according to the veteran expert, there's been no positive move on many alleged rights violations in Eritrea since 2013. I'm Matt Wells of UN News, and in this episode of our UN and Africa podcast, we'll hear Ms. Keith-Ruth discuss how arbitrary and mass arrests, suppression of political and religious freedoms, and long-term incommunicado detention have persisted in the country throughout her six-year mandate, a mandate not easily fulfilled, according to the rights investigator.
I've never visited Eritrea, not because I haven't wanted to. I have religiously asked for permission to go to Eritrea. The government of Eritrea has denied me the opportunity to be there. However, what I would like to say at this point is that not visiting Eritrea hasn't prevented me from working.
The country is now on the verge of negotiating a peaceful settlement to a 20-year border dispute with neighbouring Ethiopia, a dispute which, according to Ms. Keith-Ruth, the Eritrean government has long used to justify what she calls indefinite national military service. Ms. Keith-Ruth spoke to Daniel Johnson in Geneva about what a successful resolution to the conflict could mean for human rights in Eritrea.
First of all, I'd like to say it's still very early in the process. But having said that, the context of the status quo of what Eritrea has called the no war, no peace situation previously shouldn't be a pretext to continue violating the rights of Eritreans. And by that, it's a whole array of different rights, but the national and military service was central to it.
So let's talk about the national military service. It might not be widely known that military service in the country, in Eritrea, seems to apply for many years to almost everyone in the country.
Absolutely. The national military service started 18 years, and it could be for until one reaches the age of 50. It could be for 20 years, 14 years. It should have been for 18 months. But because of this context of no war, no peace between the two countries, it continues to be what I have called indefinite national service. So having said that, what would be important in the context of the rapprochement is it would, hopefully, as things go, this would be one reason which had been advanced to maintain this context of national, indefinite national service, which would disappear should peaceful solutions be found.
Now, let's talk about the situation more widely in Eritrea. You say that after 5 years of covering Eritrea and looking into alleged human rights abuses, that the situation really hasn't moved. There's been no positive move on specific issues, not just military service. We're talking about, or you've talked about, arbitrary and massive arrests. You've talked about a lack of political freedom and also religious freedom, incommunicado detention. And the Commission of Inquiry on Eritrea talked about this facade of calm and normality that's apparent to someone who hasn't regularly visited the country. And on that point, when did you last visit Eritrea?
I've never visited Eritrea, not because I haven't wanted to. I have religiously asked for permission to go to Eritrea. However, the government of Eritrea has denied me the opportunity to be there. However, what I would like to say at this point is that not visiting Eritrea hasn't prevented me from working. It might have been a bit more difficult in the earlier years, but in the later years of the mandate, I have been able to connect, and I have a large network of different people who provide information analysis, what is going on, almost in real time.
You're talking hundreds and hundreds of testimonies.
Yes, that, but also people who regularly are in touch with the mandate, providing analysis as well as information. And just as I said, as an example, when a respected elder who died in custody in March...
This year.
Yes, in March 2018, I was able to get that information quite early in the day.
This is a 93-year-old former director of a religious school who was imprisoned for 4 months. He died in March, as you say, and others were arrested in relation to that, and they are still being held, including teenagers, I believe.
There are two sets of arbitrary and mass arrests which happened in this context. First of all, in October, when Haji Musa, the person who passed, was arrested, and other members of his committee. Then there were protesters who were arrested, mass arrest of protesters, and they were just taken in. And of course, the same pattern that we documented, both as the commission and myself, in terms of incommunicado detention, no visits, nobody knows really where, their family mainly don't know where they are. So that's one set of arrests. The second set of arrests happened, again, massive arrests, after the funeral ceremony of this gentleman in March this year. So just after the ceremony, again, mass arrest, people were taken in, again, incommunicado, and among those are young children. And I have spoken to parents of one young boy who was arrested and who the parents don't know up to today where he has been held. So that's since March up to now.
It just sounds very, very difficult to comprehend, but maybe you could explain the lack of constitution, the lack of legislative assembly. There's no real independent civil rights movement, you say, in Eritrea. So looking ahead and going back to this border dispute that's hopefully going to be settled with Ethiopia, you say that human rights need to be central to that agreement. How might that practically happen?
First of all, there are things which need to happen in the country. There needs to be a change from a situation of lack of rule of law to rule of law. There needs to be the framework, there needs to be the institutions, there needs to be, by institutions, the framework is the constitution and other laws, which provides respect for rights. And secondly, independent institutions which need to ensure that these rights are being respected. And of course, access to an independent judiciary, etc., which needs to ensure that people have access when they are in jail, etc. That's with regards to Eritrea internally. While discussing at the level of the rapprochement, the meetings and negotiations, etc., one would need to make sure that there are people who live who across borders, their peoples in refugee camps, etc., etc. This is only one aspect of how their rights need to be respected in all this, because we are just too early in this process to say more, but there are some very specific constituencies of groups of people whose rights would need to be respected. And secondly, I think in terms of the negotiations to see how to move forward, then the mentality needs to change, because up to now it has been a mentality, especially for both sides, you know, preserving where we are in terms of borders, preserving our gains in terms of territory, and preserving other issues. And that's what brought the military service, etc., on the Eritrean side and all. The switch needs to happen. Peace has a few other components. And one of those components would be human rights, respect for those, and justice also in the whole process.
Now, on that point of reform, back in 2001, members of the so-called G15 group of political reformers were arrested. I'm not sure if that covers your mandate, but have you had any news on their detention? Do you have any idea about where they might be if they are still alive?
The G15 has been, this group of people have been really part of the questions I have consistently asked. How can one take somebody and put in custody in 2001 and up to now, there has been no news at all on people? And there are rumors also that other people have died in the process. Earlier this year, one of them, there has been reports that he passed on. And I think, but there has been no clarification, nothing. It has been total silence on their fate. They're incommunicado. They haven't been taken to any court. They haven't been given any day within the justice system. They just disappeared. So it is really a situation which absolutely needs to be clarified. People can't disappear in a jail and nobody ever knows what is going on. But above all, while this is happening, a country which says it is respectful of human rights and is adhering to human rights principles found in the charters, in the covenants, in the treaties it has signed, needs to be accountable.
So we'll see about accountability. But just to put it from Eritrea's point of view, the delegation at the Human Rights Council rejected your report, your update yesterday, and they questioned its objectivity and even your professionalism. It also acknowledged that it had problems and challenges, I think it said, as did other member states in human rights progress within the country, but it does nonetheless engage with some of the human rights mechanisms, the international human rights mechanisms, wouldn't you say?
First of all, I don't need to defend myself and my professionalism. I've been doing human rights work for the past 32 years. The responsibility of the state cannot be questioned. It is 100% their responsibility when somebody dies in custody. There should then have been, in that context, a proper inquest, which we haven't seen. Can they deny kids are being held incommunicado? It is a fact. Can they deny people have died in jail over the past few months because of their religion? It is a fact. I bring facts. I don't bring comments. I don't bring, you know, I analyze on the basis of factual situations and on the basis of the responsibilities, the obligations of the state when it adhered to human rights treaties.
What's your message then? Your mandate is ending now. Your six-year mandate began in 2013. It now ends. How is there going to be international focus on Eritrea henceforth?
I'd like to say two things with regards to that. I'm looking forward, or rather watching what is going to happen in the next few days concerning the rapprochement. This has been a really important point. However, that is no reason for all the reforms which are required for Eritrea to put in place institutions, legal framework, and practices where people are able to enjoy their rights. Eritreans need to feel that they can trust their government again. So for this to happen, there needs to be a few things. The first thing they could do is to open prison doors, allow people out, let people know what happened to their loved ones, those who have been in prison incommunicado for the past, 17 years, etc. I think there are basic things which do not require a huge amount of funds. They always say that it's a young country, a poor country, etc., etc. But opening prison doors and allowing people to see their loved ones or to have information about what is going on is not something which needs a huge amount of funds. It may need organization if people have been lost in the different jails of the country, but that's a few little things which need to happen.
How many people are we talking about? Are we talking about thousands? What kind of information do you have?
Not even Eritrea itself has figures. And that's why one of the recommendations I make in my report is to have a system of management of who is in jails, at least names. I think that's one of the most important things, a first step to know who's there and then to allow people out, those who are in jail for, you know, since so long. So that's just one aspect of things. So many people, but figures, data in Eritrea is totally opaque. I wonder to what extent their own data is verifiable and credible.
Well, that was Sheila Keith-Ruth, the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Eritrea, calling for transparent data to address an array of alleged rights violations by the country's government. In a statement issued by his spokesperson, UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres has welcomed the positive steps taken recently by Ethiopia and Eritrea, and commends the efforts of both countries' leaders towards sustainable peace. Ms. Keith-Ruth's parting commentary suggests that such a peace, if successful, could produce widespread dividends for the people of Eritrea. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa, our podcast here at UN News. I'm Matt Wells. Thank you for listening. Wake up, good morning.
This is Africa, Corona, the Congo. Wake up, good morning.